Welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 372. It's Bloom Board Tuesday. Going to talk some starting pitching, looking ahead for the next few weeks and looking at skills of said starting pitchers to kind of decide who should we start and sit and much more. We'll talk some recent news, little listener league update, and some other shenanigans because I think this one's about to go off the rails this evening. But before we get started, you can find me on Twitter at BDNtrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How you doing, my friend?
Surely to go off the rails today. Coming at you a little bit hot tonight. So we'll see where it goes. Doing well. Had a full day today. Dropped off our youngest at kind of like practice kindergarten orientation for the week. This was his first day there, and then played 18 holes. Because what else are you going to do on a Tuesday?
Yeah.
Whatever day it is. Played 18. With technically a foursome, but man, it was a rough crew. It was so two out of our four recovering from surgery. My dad recovering from eye surgery, my brother recovering from surgery. So they didn't really play. My dad played from within 100 yards. So it was me and my brother-in-law, Peter. It's his birthday today, so happy birthday. We played the actual 18, and the rest of the group just kind of came along for the ride. It was a great day, and then did some birthday stuff after that. Caught up on baseball things, and here I am with you at the end of my day.
Where else would you rather be?
Where else would I rather be? Exactly. Than here with you, my friend. So
yes, because trust me, as I know, when you split from a thing like this, it's going to cost you a lot more than just putting up with me at the end of your day. So I'm good. Been running on fumes, but we're good. We're rocking and rolling, and it's been work and schools and gymnastics and all kinds of stuff. But we're go, and it's got the big inning on. We got a couple games that might make things
We've got invested Bubba in a couple of live games, both fantasy wise, Giants wise. So stay tuned, folks. We could see some fireworks at some point.
Potential is there. The potential is definitely there for some fireworks. But speaking of fireworks, let's just talk about it. The Listener League, we're rounding into, we were going to do this last week, but we talked to MLB trade deadline recap. So Listener League update time, month of August. We got, and real quick, Woody wants to know, Bubba, you started gymnastics? No, there's no bar in this world that would hold my ass up. Yeah, it's for my daughter's gymnastics, but I like it. Good one. I'm not Will Ferrell and Vince Vaughn from old school. That's for sure. I'm more the rumbling.
Hey, but the people would pay to see it. The people would pay to see it.
The people would pay to see it. I hope they pay for my medical bills too. But that'd be a doozy, as they say. But let's talk listener leagues here. A little update on the overall standings. If you aren't in the listener leagues, you don't care. Fast forward about 4 or 5 minutes and you'll get your fix there. But we want to shout those that, support us, play in our leagues. This is our, second year doing the auctions. So we got those going. And Ryan, I'll give the floor to you as you do your weekly listener league updates.
Yes. So, if you are not in the listener league, if you don't care, skip ahead a couple minutes, but we do want to give shout outs to these 150 folks who participated in our auction leagues. We try and make this feel like a home league, so we do our monthly update. I do the weekly updates to the Patreon on folks who are in the top 15 overall, but also top 15 every week.
Convenient, but, top 15, by the way. Convenient, but yes.
Why convenient? What are you, 16? You're 18. Now.
Yeah,
I was Jesus. Right there. You're slacking at 18.
Yep. Yep.
Let's start with our own teams then, I guess. So you're at 18 and I am we're at 73. We're at the top half. I will take that. We'll do a quick Raj check. He's at 121.
Okay. That's always the big check.
Yeah. He's with one eye, he's still climbing the standing. So you like that. So that's where we're all at. Well done, man. At 18. I like that. You're tied with the Python Hunter with Dustin. Nice. 18 as we speak. Bearing the lead at this point, but number one, I'll run through 1 through 5. Bubba, we'll do 6 through 10 because those are the toughest pronunciations. And then 11 through 15, I'll round it out. But our leader He was leading at the All-Star break. He's leading now. Brandon Waddell, Wadeezy, doesn't just play 12 teamers, folks. He does the 15 team auctions as well. Brandon Waddell is our overall leader and qualifies for free registration to First Pitch Arizona for whoever wins the overall, courtesy of Baseball HQ. So Brandon is currently in that spot. We've got the Wisconsin projector legend, Eric Leggett, at number two. He's been battling with Alfred Perez, who's number three. Both Alfred, Eric, as well as Brandon have basically been trading spots atop the top of the overall, and they're all within, looks like, 60 points. So well done, all three of you. Rounding out our top five, Michael Tolofsen, who was out there at First Pitch Arizona with us last year. And then Aaron Asbury, number five, with not only a great team name, Rare Steak Ratios.
That's right.
But somewhat little known fact, he designed our podcast logo as well. Aaron's a great dude. Glad to see Aaron at number five.
And he was battling last year too. So that's back-to-back years where he's putting together a nice showing there. So now the fun begins. 6 through 10, Gerald Points is coming in sixth place right now. My good buddy, John Wilder, Ryan's nemesis at times, is at seven. I'm glad
he's
I got
my guy. To, I like
I know,
him.
I know. We love.
So is Nemesis.
Yeah, so is Nemesis. That's for sure. At eighth, Brendan Cool, because he's so cool. That's he's coming in there. He's had a heck of a week. He had the best week last week, didn't he? From your article,
yep. Brendan,
so, he made a massive climb. Yep. So that was good. Derek Eichler is ninth, and then James Oss is 10th. I did my best to not completely screw that one up. But the top 10 is looking good. And, you know, it's 200 points basically separating first through 10th, which seems like a lot. It might be a lot, but it's still doable. So lots of moving and shaking there. What do you got from 11 through 15?
11 through 15. Ryan Williams checks in at 11. Bubba's guy, Canton Dog, at number 12. Steve Brun, 13. Roscoe Myrick at 14. And Market 8 rounds out our top 15 through August 11 games.
So yeah, really, really good looking teams here. Actually, it's loaded. A lot of the familiar names, a lot of new names, a lot of moving and shaking. You got Ben Tidd sitting at 26. Michael Cicchini's 22. He's battling me.
Tidd used to be top 10. The guy,
he's slacking a little bit.
Guy went down the hole.
He's hanging out with me too much on Mondays. That's his problem. It's okay. House of Dragons is over. He'll be back. He was preoccupied for a little bit there. But Michael Cicchini's at 22. Yeah, hot D. There you go. Cicchini's battling me in my league. That's been a back and forth Thunderdome at this point in time. But yeah, a lot of good stuff. There's Sawa sitting there at 30th. So him and Wilder can probably talk trash to each other. And a lot of good people. Our buddy TDK is 34, but I won't keep going down the list. Just a lot of people that have helped us or keep things entertaining, and just everybody that in order to get in the leagues, you have to be a Patreon member. And so we appreciate you all, and enjoy the last about 6.5 weeks of the season here. See where it goes.
Yep.
All right. Another bit of programming news. Next Tuesday evening, our Tuesday show will not be a Bloomberg show, Ryan. It'll be a different show. Do you want to tell them why?
Yeah, we are doing our annual meatball draft. This is the fifth year I think we're doing it, kind of crazy. But so we are going to. So we've done this. This will be the fifth year. But this is a draft and hold league for next season, so for 2027, that our good buddy Rob DiPietro puts together every year. So we draft typically last couple years has been the first 11 rounds. This year we're going to do the first 15 rounds. So Bubba, prep your spreadsheet accordingly for your prep there. But we're gonna draft it next Tuesday. I've got the 14th pick. You have the 10th pick, I think.
Yep, 10th pick or me. Yep.
And so we'll do that draft next Tuesday, and then I believe shortly thereafter you and I will record our kind of recap of the draft. So it's one of my favorite drafts of the year. It's like pretty much a home league at this point. We get the entire league on Zoom and do the draft. That will be streamed on at least the audio portion, I believe, on Rob DiPietro's podcast, The Deadpool Hitter. So check that out there, and then you will have our reaction. Plus, I'm sure there will be all kinds of podcasts talking about the meatball draft because we're all starving for content for next season already.
Yeah, if you haven't heard the meatball draft, then you stop listening to baseball podcasts in August, because everyone will talk about it for 2 to 3 episodes of pops. So
they can all critique your first round, whoever your first round pick is going to be. Last year was Junior Caminero, which turned out quite well. It was actually interesting. I had, not to get too far in it, but I think we'll have some time tonight. So whatever. KDS wise, I'll refrain from saying which KDS pick you had, but
I had the last one. I'll say it because it goes by current standings, and I'm getting smoked this year. I'm not afraid to say it. I won this inaugural league. I will have that flag forever. I do not care. But this year, my team is horrible. Jordan Romano with the save. That's save number 7 for all the haters out there with the Rockies. All right, Ryan, what else you got there?
There you go. So I had the option of picking 5th or 14th, and I went 14th. You know, who knows what the draft's going to be. Usually, like, getting a top 5 pick is a pretty good idea. I went back to 14th just because our good buddy Dom Rello is 15th. I like hanging out with him. But like I said, we do the first 15 rounds, and then we pick up the rest of the last 35 rounds in October. So the 15th pick is the first pick of that restart in October, and I'll get the second pick. So I had to do a little bit of, you know, do I want a top 5 pick or just say whatever, go to 14. Presumably get 2 good bats and then have a good pick once we restart in October. I know you didn't quite have that luxury, Bubba. You were basically just given your draft spot at that point,
which is fine. I'd rather be in the middle than the front if I had my options. So it works for me. It is what it is, and we battle on. I'll make a lot of foolish mistakes, but I will never forget every possible show mentioned that Junior Caminero was not a first round pick, and I was for that. And boy, oh boy, were they all wrong.
Well, actually, it's funny, when I was looking at like deciding between 5th and 14th, I was like, I might end up with Junior Caminero at 5, and I was like, that might not be the worst thing in the world. That he will not be available to me at 14.
No, he will not.
Or you at 10?
I was like, he won't get past 10. He shouldn't get to me either. But if he does, he's not getting to you. That's for sure. Yeah. So. Yeah, no, it'll be fun to check out. I'm also being a little snarky because that's who I am. But I'm looking forward to it. Always a great, great time. All right, while we're angry at the world, let's talk about some news and notes here. More injuries to get Captain Cutts excited about right about now. Nick Kurtz is likely out for the season, the A's are saying. He had an injection into his injured hand or wrist, and he has to go into a splint for 4 weeks before he can try to ramp up. So if you're doing quick math, 4 weeks takes you almost midway through the second week of September. There's 4 weeks in a month. So, yeah, you're pretty much gonzo there with Nick Kurtz. You can cuts Kurtz whenever you feel like it.
Agreed. And your new guy, Jeff McNeil, filling in at first base. I did not know you were in love with Jeff McNeil. I'm quite surprised that you are in love with Jeff McNeil.
First right-handed pitching only. He sits first lefties.
But it's your new boy. So, is Jeff McNeil, like, did you add him in Fab last week?
Yeah, I have a couple shares of him that I was playing because they got 3 righties against Tampa Bay. It's only 1 over the weekend, so that's a sketchy play, but it's all in Sacramento this week. So I started him for the first half of the week for sure. Tommy Tinkles will likely play versus lefties at first base.
Yeah.
Tommy White for the new listeners out there. But he tinkles because he doesn't hit it out of the infield very often. So, yeah, but Jeff McNeil on a righty-heavy week, even on the road, he's been very effective. So
I'm looking ahead at the weekly planner for next week, and not only is – so the A's are on the road next week, but it's 7 games, 6 righties, and a 9% strikeout minus walk for those starters against the A's next week. So you could – I'm not going to say you can roll with Jeff McNeil, but if you're Bubba, you can roll with Jeff McNeil next week on the road against a bunch of righties, which he may lead off. So
if you want to go even deeper, the following week they have 6 games at home, and right now it's 6 righties as well. So
again, like Jeff McNeil heater incoming.
And the following week
you used to hate the guy, dude.
Hey, I'm a man that we talked about in the Discord. Some of the listeners appreciate
you got shout outs for your
your
willingness.
It's business, Ryan. It's business. And
I just sit here and hold grudges versus Walbert Urania. That's what I do.
I look at who's swinging it well, who can help me from a week-to-week basis. Right now, McNeil can help me on a week-to-week basis. I believe he's gonna get first base eligibility. He has second and outfield, so you get CIMI outfield. That is tremendous this time of the year to be able to move guys in and out throughout the week. So I'll roll with them until the wheels come off, which could be next week. But we will. He cost you like a dollar. Like, it's not killing me at all.
We can move. We can move on. Because if Jeff McNeil one position wasn't good enough, then Jeff McNeil at four positions, you know, why not? Even better.
Oh, I can't wait for him to carry me to a championship now after all this. This is
awesome. If you pick him up on the AC, it's 100% heater incoming. So
that's been a nice run that's going to come to an end eventually, but hopefully not till October 1st.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope not too. This was a devastating one that happened on Monday. Nate the Great, Nate Eovaldi, lands on the IL with an elbow injury. I have not seen an update on said injury yet, but we know his track record. Let's just be honest about these things. I'm not very optimistic of what's taking place here.
Yeah, agreed. No matter what we hear about a timeline, I think not to go all Bubba here, but I think you got to move on from Eovaldi. I mean, maybe you can wait if you want to hear about a timeline, but anything. I mean, we had some Joe Ryan discussion in the Discord last week. That's like a glute. I'm like, maybe I'll wait. But anything arm related at this point, especially with Eovaldi for a pitcher, like you pretty much have to move on. At minimum, it's, you know, IL stint in 15 days and arm, like, what are the chances you come back on time? So absent any extremely encouraging news for Eovaldi, I think you gotta start making some plans there. We talked about Cody Bradford on the show last Thursday for the Fab preview. Pitched well again Tuesday night. I think just had one strikeout though, so maybe a little bit lucky. But Cody Bradford, I think, is a fine replacement, and not only replacement, but is firmly now in that Texas rotation.
JT Brubaker with the save for the Giants, by the way.
Oh my God. I did not even know he was on the Giants.
Dylan Smith blew it last night. I think he pitched back to back. But yeah, Brubaker with the save. So
wow. Pirates legend, Brubaker. Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, no, I'm with you. Eovaldi's probably done. Bradford, Ben and I talked about it on Monday. I'm very timid with him and Montgomery. I think they can both be serviceable streamers, but they've been out for so long. I think there's going to be kid gloves on, and I don't know what the complete ceiling is with either one. But if you need someone with a pulse for a couple starts, and Bradford had the two step this week, so yep. People were pretty excited about that. So that kind of checked out as well.
Yep.
New York Mets, Devin Williams to the IL with an elbow injury. Devin Williams, he wasn't available one night to close the game because of like a dead arm type situation. Now he goes on the IL, and the Mets think it'll be a limited stint on the IL. I don't buy any of that, but you can if you like. Kodai Senga got the save on Monday.
Kodai Senga did get the save on Monday, has pitched. And shout out to our buddy Greg Jewett over at Reliever Recon. He has been on this for a while. But Kodai Senga for his – you just never know, for as bad as these guys can be in one role, they can move to a different role and be good. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Senga, but since he's basically moved to the back end of the bullpen, it's been three scoreless, three clean appearances for Kodai Senga, and got the save in the most recent appearance. So you have to be interested, right? And the other thing, there's not many other options in the Mets bullpen. Like Weaver's obviously gone now. So it's just, it could be Senga. And that's, the Mets aren't, yes, it's been a disaster of a season, but we always talk about the size of the saves pie. That could be a medium-sized pie.
It could be a medium-sized pie, and it just depends if they're being honest with Devin Williams or not. And I said, I'm not buying it. But
are you dropping Williams? Or are you waiting for something there?
I'd wait a little bit longer, because if, God forbid, it is a minimum stay, then you're going to want him, but
yeah.
Oh, he hasn't been. He's been good, but yeah.
The other thing I'd add with closers at this time of year, no matter which closer you have, take a look at where you're at in the standings for saves. Like, you may not even need Devin Williams anyway. Everything is so dependent on where you're bunched or where you're spaced out in that category. So this is a decent reminder to double check where you're at there, and you may not even need Williams.
That's a very, very great point as well. I forgot to put it on the outline, but you're going to be fine with this. I'll set you up. Griffin Jacks was on. He got skipped from his start over the weekend, went on the IL with an elbow injury. I just wanted to mention he flew to Texas to see Mr. Meister to get a second opinion. The Rays said they got good news. Griffin Jacks, after visiting Dr. Keith Meister in Dallas, he got an injection to calm the back of the elbow down, which I don't know how that sounds good. They feel like he's in a good spot. We'll take the ball out of his hand for two more days and then get him back to throwing. So best case scenario, Jax is avoided the scare, and he might be back sometime right when he's available, which I don't see happening.
Okay. I would say hold until yeah. you have a worse timeline there.
I would hope we'd have an idea by the end of the weekend if he starts throwing in 2 days. Yeah. So I think we'd get an idea, but who knows? Just remember, he also bullpen to starter innings. Like, there's a lot of things.
Yes. He's on the Braxton Ashcraft, like, oh crap, what the hell are we going to do innings wise? But yeah, I mean, the Rays need all the help they will be able to get. So I feel like they are incentivized to get Jax back if he is in fact healthy.
All right, Kyle Stowers, the Miami Marlins, hits the IL with a hamstring injury, the opposite hamstring that is his left, I believe. He hurt his right earlier and missed 4 weeks then. We're expecting 4 weeks again for Stowers, which puts him out again till basically the middle of September. It looks like Griffin Conine is going to go to first. You got maybe some more Estuary Ruiz playing time. Lots of moving pieces in Miami, Ryan.
Estuary Ruiz sure to be an everyday player now that I dropped him in my 12-teamer this past week. But I mean, we've talked about it. I'm not gonna hammer it home too much. I just think, man, give that guy everyday playing time, which I'm not gonna say is happening, because the Marlins are they. I don't think they like Estuary Ruiz, but they are starting to run out of other options. So we'll see. Graham Pauly got called up today. Not a factor. Griffin Conine, like you said. Really like the power there. Griffin Conine is kind of quietly putting together a pretty nice second half. So more playing time safety for Mr. Conine. And who knows, man? Ruiz dropped in some spots this past week. If he can start four out of six, you like that a lot. But who knows what's actually going to happen there.
You like that for sure. Jameson Taillon to the IL with forearm tendonitis. You probably shouldn't have been rostered in to begin with, but I just wanted to highlight how just destroyed the Jays rotation is. You got Scherzer back, Bieber, like they're stuck in there now. Soriano, Dylan Cease. Yu Savage had knee surgery and he's week to week, so he's gone. SWR, Simeon Woods Richardson, got recalled on Monday, came in long relief when Taillon left and picked up the win. Not saying pick him up, but he looks like the guy to take over.
SWR was a beast the last 6 weeks of last season, but yeah, wouldn't count on that again.
I just laughed. It was one of those like blessings in disguise. In a DC, I had no one healthy but SWR, so I put him in on Monday. Picked up the W. Not like my team's competing, sure. But it's just funny. Like the nice. Only place I'd ever think about rostering him, and I was kind of forced into it. So, yes. Last bit of news we have here is Zach Veen is getting promoted by the Colorado Rockies, tearing up AAA once again. We've seen that before. We'll see how it translates this time through. It appears a potential platoon with Jordan Beck, but we'll see. Because like you're not Moniak's going to DH. You're not taking Carrick out. You're not taking McCarthy out. So it's kind of that seems like the only option.
That's the only, and this is why I'm like just very lukewarm on Zach Veen. We've just seen this so many times with the Rockies, not just with Veen, but I mean, Jordan Beck himself, it's just the playing time is so inconsistent. And I mean, you say Moniak DH, but I mean, he plays some corner outfield as well. So like there are five outfielders right now on the Rockies. And so while you love to see Zach Veen's like numbers in AAA this season are just completely eye-popping, 24 homers, 18 steals, hitting .327 in 445 plate appearances. Yes, the Pacific Coast League can do that to a hitter, but like, I don't know. I love the talent with Zach Veen. I love the long-term outlook for Zach Veen. Am I interested in FAB this coming week? Let's see what the playing time looks like, but I'm leaning not, just because Rockies are going to Rocky and there's five outfielders for three spots, maybe four spots if you include DH, but they like to throw some other guys in DH as well. So I don't know, man, just a lot of bodies there.
Yeah. And right now if things stand, they're in Coors for the whole week, but it's four lefties and two righties. So that's not going to bode well. Probably
the next week.
Yeah. Next week's schedule. So that's what I'm talking about, post FAB.
Right.
That's not going to help you at all either. So
no,
keep those things in mind.
Yeah.
All right, before we get to the Bloom board, Ryan, Paul in the chat, we did bury the lead. Rengifo hit a grand slam tonight. The mascot is raking for the Padres. Yeah, he's raking for the Padres. He's, I think he has like a 900 OPS over the last couple of weeks. He's balling out, and I do have him rostered in certain 15s. So Rengifo is playing and playing very well. I just wanted to give a shout. Thanks, Paul, for the reminder on that one.
Love to see our original mascot reborn out in time. San Diego will do that to a person. That's
yes,
invigorating down there.
All right, news and notes are done, Ryan. Let's get to the Bloom board for the evening and bring it up and let the folks know what we are cooking with.
All right, we are cooking with a board with numbers and colors on it. I will explain such numbers and colors. These are starting pitchers. So the idea of this is to, like, again, at this point in the season, I know, and I know on Bench with Bubba with you and Ben, you guys have talked about this the last couple of weeks, but also the last couple of years over the last few weeks of the season. Like, schedule is matchups, like, that is everything right now. Trying to project, even just based on skills, what a player is going to do over the last 5-6 weeks of the season. It's just such a small sample that anything can happen. We all see crazy Aprils. April's always, you know, the microscope is on that. You just see crazy performances. The same is true in September, probably even more so in September, just because of all the roster churn. So what we're looking at here is basically pitchers that might be in a start sit bucket based on their starting percentage in an NFBC 12 teamer. So these are starting pitchers that are started in less than 75% of NFBC 12 teamers. So didn't want to just talk about the, you know, the best of the best. Wanted to kind of hit that middle class here. What we're looking at here is the board for the best skills over the last 30 days of all those starting pitchers. Started under 75% in 12 teamers. So that's how the list is ordered by. And then on top of that, because this is kind of both parts of it, you want to roster the skills, but you also want to leverage the matchups over these last few weeks. We've got the scheduled opponents for each starting pitcher, along with the average WRC plus, which is a fancy stat for hitting effectiveness, in this case for a lineup, hundreds league average. Anything worse is advantageous for a pitcher because they are facing a bad lineup. And then anything above 100, that's a good offense. So you want to avoid those. This WRC plus is against the handedness of that pitcher as well for the season. So that's what we are looking at. Most of these pitchers, we can kind of see their next 3 to 4 opponents over the next 3 weeks. But yeah, they're ordered by skill. So the most skilled guys are at the top, and we'll work our way down. Hopefully we skip one particular pitcher that's on this, but we'll see where you take this ship, my friend.
Oh, we're setting sail. Don't you worry. You might run into a wall or two, but we will find your arena around that as we go. But we'll kick it off with the man on the top here. Give Joey Cantillo a little shout here because he's one of those pitchers that started out so good this season and then hit the skids. Things got a little worrisome. And I will also plug, like, you can see this sheet on the Bubba and Bloom Patreon. Ryan also has live Bloom boards on the Bubba and Bloom Patreon. And I tweeted out something the other day about Gavin Williams was at the top of all three. He's not at the top of all three, but he's pretty close still to this day. It's like a K to walk over the last 30 days, like fastball increase, pitch mix, stuff like that. On the pitch mix side of things, though, that's where it stood out to me. Cantillo is right behind Gavin Williams. When I put that out there, Cantillo is still pretty high on that pitch mix change. So we're looking at Cantillo 61% started in these OCs right now. But K to walk over the last 30 days, nearly 24%, over a 16% swinging strike, which is outstanding. With that 36% ball, which we'd like to see a little lower, but you can live with that. And great matchups coming up at Coors is whatever, but you love the Angels, and Toronto is horrific, especially against lefties right now. So those two stand out in a big, big way. What do you see when you dig in on Joey Cantillo right now?
So this is one where it's just tricky because, Cantillo's skills have been elite. It's backed by a pitch mix change. It is. You look, just look at Joey Cantillo's curveball usage throughout the season. Took a major uptick in May and has only gone even further. In May, it was 20% usage on the curveball, then 35% in June, 40% in July, and now 43%. Here in August. So major leaning into the curveball for Joey Cantillo. The skills have backed it. Best skills of any pitcher over the last 30 days. started under 75% of NFBC 12 teamers. And the conundrum is, like, the results haven't really been there. Right. So that's the tricky part. It's like, how do you weigh this? Joey Cantillo over his last six starts is a 4.94 ERA, a 1.86 whip, one win in six starts. So, like, yeah, 36 Ks in 23 innings, just nine walks. Skills have been there. The results haven't been. But I look at everything else here. He's missing bats. Control's been okay. I mean, control's always been an issue for Cantillo, but he's kind of reined it into like a league average level over the last month. You pair that with the swing and miss. And I just trust that given the upcoming matchups, I like three of the next four matchups for Cantillo. I think this is someone you can trust over at least the next 3 weeks and then take the matchups from there. Even though the results haven't been there, the skills, the matchups line up really well for Joey Cantillo.
And I want to shout out, if you mentioned it, I apologize, but we were talking about the pitch mix. I think you're saying the curveball usage with him.
Yeah.
His fastball is also in the top improvers over the last 30 days, 0.7 mile per hour increase as well. He's like eighth or ninth best over the last 30 days. So
there you go.
More curveballs, but still throwing harder as well, which will help with that swinging strike of over 16%, keeping batters off balance. So yeah, the results are sketchy, which is frustrating, but great matchups, great skills. You got to hope it clicks. Jacob Lopez, great to see him obviously at the top here because
yeah,
I was, Torres takes our buddy, Chris. Yep. Torres put something on Twitter and I was joking with him because there's a two step this week in Sacramento. And I just, you know, I golden rule never Sacramento basically. And Torres said he's going for it. Our buddy Jason Santu has so many shares of Jacob Lopez going this week. He sent me a screenshot yesterday, last night while we were watching the game. I was like, oh, damn. And that worked out really well because I want to highlight Jacob Lopez. This is the guy last year we were rostering all the time, even in Sacramento. He was pitching great. Had some arm issues, struggles earlier this year, AAA, got recalled July 7th, rejoined the rotation July 10th. They ramped up his innings. Last four starts have been at least five innings. It's been two runs or less. Walks have been limited. Strikeouts have been really good. And he's also on these live bloom boards, Ryan, for obviously for the K to walk increase to what you're showing on your board here at 20% over the last 30 days. It's an automatic increase over 3% because he sucked. But we're also seeing a pitch mix change. We're seeing the swinging strike there. Matchups are a little shaky is the question. And two of them are at home, Ryan. So what are your thoughts on Jacob Lopez?
Yeah, shout out to, I guess Santu and both Torres. Torres put it out there in the Discord as well. He said he enjoyed our fab preview, but did not appreciate the Jacob Lopez slander. And that could be, we'll see, could be mea culpa on our parts, but maybe adjusting too slow to how well Jacob Lopez has pitched lately. You mentioned the control. I think that has been huge for Jacob Lopez. Obviously, the whiffs have been there. You love to see that. But two walks or less in eight of his last nine starts. Like, that is absolutely huge for Jacob Lopez. So I don't know, man. Like, we both faded him this week because, yes, it was a two-step, but both were at home. Obviously, cleared hurdle one with flying colors. So you kind of like the at Houston matchup. You love the at Texas matchup. The home against Minnesota could be shaky, but who knows? I just think the way Jacob Lopez is pitching right now, just missing so many bats over the last month and doing it with not even decent control, like good control. This is someone who, admittedly, I have been a bit too late to the party for. Like, you look at the year-to-date line for Jacob Lopez and it's just like, eh, but you look at the way he's trended over the last month, this just looked like a different guy.
Yep, that's why I know we talk about it a lot on this show. I rarely look at year-to-date lines right now at all. It's like I'm on a month-to-month, even almost in Fab right now. I'm almost looking at last 14 days. I'm playing week-to-week right now. Like, what can you do for me right now?
Agreed. And somewhat of an aside, but like anyone, so this is kind of for those watching on YouTube or watching the stream live, this is somewhat of an adaptation to the weekly planner, which is available to all the Patreon subscribers. The weekly planner does have year to date skills for a pitcher. I'm kind of wondering, I don't know if I replace year to date with like last 30 days. Do I supplement it with that? Do I add three new columns and do like a year to date plus a last whatever, 3 weeks, 30 days? I will think hard about that because it's especially on the pitching side, it's important to kind of look at how they've done lately, especially with velocity changes, pitch mix changes, all that stuff. So something I'm tucking away.
I think that's a great idea. Put it down in your notepad and see if you remember that one for later.
I don't have a notepad.
Sean Manaea, this is a big one because 57% started right now in OCs, 17% K to walk over the last 30 days, 13.4% swinging strike, 31% ball rate, decent matchups coming up. I just want to mention one thing and then I'll let you run with this, but I actually, he is one of the topics on Monday's leading off show that I was doing because he pitched on Sunday and pitched really, really well to the tune of 11 strikeouts and no walks over seven innings against the Pirates. And what stood out in this, and now I look at your Bloom board and he checks the dots here. Sean Manaea, listen to this stat, Ryan, has thrown 13 pitches of at least 94 miles per hour since joining the Mets rotation in mid-June. All 13 have come in his last two starts. If you go to the live Bloom board, the biggest fastball riser over the last 30 days by 1.4 miles per hour, Sean Manaea, everybody. So, he is ramping up, good or bad. We don't know, Dr. Dave, earmuffs. But what are your thoughts on Sean Manaea? Because he has put on a clinic of late.
That's huge. I should probably be in the live Bloom boards, and I am now. Yeah, plus one. That's huge. I mean, for someone to go from, I mean, that's massive. And it doesn't really matter if you throw, well, it matters if you throw 92 or 97, but to go from 90.5 in Manaea's case, 90.6 to 92, like that is a, especially for someone that doesn't really live off velocity, like Manaea throwing, as we can see on this Bloom board, he throws a ton of strikes, 31% ball rate. You now pair that, if Sean Manaea can live 92, that is fantastic. And I actually love the matchups coming up, even though like kind of the average WRC plus against lefties for these next four opponents is league average. That includes Washington, who's not the same Washington team that we've seen all year. So you like that. The White Sox are league average against lefties. Milwaukee and the Rays are both pretty bad against lefties. So Sean Manaea, like, yeah, you're not going to expect the 11 Ks that he had against a pretty bad Pirates team against lefties, at least last time out. But this is someone who's throwing harder lately. He's throwing strikes. He's got a great schedule. This is someone, again, you look at the year-to-date line, 4.13 ERA, 1.32 WHIP. It's like, not really. Has mostly lived out of the bullpen, made 11 starts. But this is someone we've seen Manaea been dominant down the stretch as a starter before. And it could very well happen again.
And this is where also, like you mentioned, looking at like last 30 days, this is even more than 30 days, but another note on Manaea that I was waiting until you were done is since he joined the rotation on June 13th, you mentioned like it was 12 starts or whatever. He has a 3.5 ERA since June 13th, season's 4.13. He's thrown 61 and a third, 58 hits, 61 Ks over the 61 and a third innings, and only 18 walks over those 11 starts. So he has been awesome. And it was one bad start, really, if you look at his game logs. He had four runs against the Phillies. Everything else was three runs or less. He had one outing where he walked five against Cleveland. Otherwise, it's pretty much two walks or less. He has four straight quality starts. Like, he's pitched really well. And I know I have not given him the, I guess, attention he deserves.
Well, nor have 43% of NFBC 12 teamers, because he's only started in 57% of leagues.
There you go. All right. Don't mess with the Drohan, everybody. Shane Drohan is 25% started in 12s, which is kind of surprising, but maybe it's matchup based. Maybe I can guess the Dodgers this week, and that's probably why. That's why I sat Gasser as well. But Drohan's been awesome. Almost a 20% K to walk, almost a 14% swinging strike, 36% ball. Matchups are a bit tricky, Ryan. But what do you got on Shane Drohan? He is coming off a rough start against the Twins, his first real hiccup since like early June, if at all, this season.
Yeah, it's been, so we had the tough start against Minnesota his last time out, two starts before that against Road Rockies, gave up five runs, which wasn't great, though had six Ks, two walks, so you like that. The strikeouts and walks look great for Drohan. The results haven't been there. I'm always going to trust the strikeouts, walks. Would not, again, the reason the start percent at 25% is so low is because, you know, smart folks are benching Drohan against the Dodgers. I would do that, but I would totally start Drohan against the lifeless Seattle Mariners, start him against the Mets, probably against the Cubs as well. So he's pitched really well lately. And he's probably gonna stay in the Brewers rotation.
Yeah, they're going six man right now, which they need to do to save innings. And also, we'll have to wait and see. Kyle Harrison on Tuesday night got shelled by San Diego, and velocity was considerably down. And he was just a couple starts removed from that injury he had. So I'd be a little concerned if I'm a Kyle Harrison owner. I'd be concerned about Paul Skeens. We're not going to talk about him, but that's another story as well. They're both on the struggle bus, and velocity is quite down for both tonight. But there's room for Drohan to stick around unless the Brewers get real goofy with things.
Yeah. Yeah, and he could certainly be probably one of your new category of bench streamers, but could be quite and has been quite good lately despite the two shaky outings.
Yeah, he should be a bench streamer. Like, I'm keeping Gasser in my 15s. Maybe 12s is different, but 15s, like, these guys are good enough to let's say they make six more starts. I wouldn't be shocked if you use them for at least three, if not four. So, like, you're looking at Drohan's schedule right here. You take that Dodgers start out there. Seattle doesn't scare me. Mets are a coin toss. Cubs scare me. So, like, at least two out of the next four, I would probably start Shane Drohan.
Which is kind of all you need, especially if you've got three, four starters on the bench. If you want to use them for half the time, that works.
Yep. All right, Kyle Leahy. We've talked about him quite a bit in Fab lately, more than most people would probably care to hear. But he's up to 44% started in 12s, which is interesting. 24% K to walk, 11.4% swinging strike, 34% ball percentage. Matchups, Philadelphia is not exciting. Cincinnati's struggling. Baltimore, but it's the Dodgers. And Dodgers aren't even that good, but they're still the Dodgers. You got to respect it. Leahy's just been great. Strikeouts have been up of late, and that shows in this K to walk. But I've mentioned on Fab shows, it's been two earned runs or less in every start since June 23rd. Ratio-wise is doing great things for you, and the strikeouts are starting to come along. It's just how long do you want to trust it? Because the skills are kind of,
Two walks in Kyle Lee's last five starts combined. Yep. That has also helped quite a bit, especially when you led with it, right? The uptick in Ks lately, 26% strikeout rate for Leahy over his last four, 2.35 ERA, 109. Yeah, pitching really well right now. I'm surprised to see the start percentage this high, but I guess if you have a sub 3 ERA over an entire month, that's going to happen. And honestly, three of these next four matchups don't really scare me, even if it's Great American Small Park.
Nah, yeah, it's fine.
Cincinnati's not that great. And Lee doesn't.
Sean Burke just rolled in there and shut them down. And Burke's good, don't get me wrong, but Lee and Burke, they're that different?
No, and it's really not that great of a lineup. So, I think you can. I don't think Lee's going to be quite this good. Like, you don't have two walks combined in five starts with, 34%. But, like, ball rate, that's probably not going to hold. So he's not going to be – the skills aren't going to be this good for Leahy going forward, but I still think he's obviously startable in 12-teamers and probably mid-rotation piece in the right matchups.
Yep, he is 1,000% a bench streamer, that's for sure. You're rolling with him, seeing where it goes. It's crazy with St. Louis. It's like they have Leahy, they got Pallante. Like, they just have these guys that you expect nothing from, and they're all pitching well.
And they sent Quinn Matthews down. It's like, damn.
Yeah, they're making things happen there. I'll leave it at that. I was going to make some bad comment, but we'll stop. Kumar Rocker got rocked in his last start. He had six runs against Baltimore, but prior to that, it was three really strong starts. It's always like all or nothing with Kumar, but the bright side is it's two walks or less in since June 5th. Strikeouts are always a potential with Kumar Rocker, and that showcased here with it's a 16% K to walk, but a 14.4% swinging strike. 35% ball rate. What do you think about Kumar Rocker, maybe outside of the at Sacramento start?
Which I did bench him for in pretty Me much too. All my life. I've got some Kumar in draft and holds, a couple fab leagues, and especially after the blow up, his most recent start, you don't want to go into sack town with that. So bench Rocker for that start this current week, but let's see how he looks. I think he's probably startable against Washington, at the White Sox, and probably at home against the A's. Has pitched pretty well. And I know this is your guy, so I don't want to take too much of your thunder. You may have soured on him, but he's pitched pretty well lately. And like you said, the control, the consistency with the walks has been massive for Kumar Rocker.
And we should just retitle this episode Bench Streamers, because literally I haven't found a guy yet that I'd be like, oh, you have to cut. But it's not, you're not going to start them every time, but you're going to utilize these guys more than you think. And that's where I think I've talked about it a ton on our shows, is my mindset changed this year to doing that. And I'm not saying it's the right way, but I think it's something people should at least give a chance to some different options, I guess, is where I'll go with that. And we're going to get to some pretty soon here where that's not the case. But like this top part, maybe it's because that's where they have the best skills. Makes sense. Like, correct, you're not going to start these guys 20 like all the time. Like Kimura Rocker, I love him. You mentioned I've talked about him all year. I haven't started him every week. I've dropped him a couple times, picked him back up. But I do believe in the skills. And a lot of it was because the role was weird. The role's locked in. The Rangers pitching is horrific. Now Eovaldi's gone. The depth that they're pitching is really bad. So unless Rocker really struggles, he's there for the rest of the year. Yeah. I want to get your thoughts here. Christian Javier actually wrote about the Astros rotation for PT Tomorrow that comes out on Wednesday. Christian Javier is 4% started in 12s. He just returned from the IL recently, 15% K to walk, 13% swinging strike, 31% ball rate. He's got the Mariners. He's got the A's on the road, the Yankees, the White Sox. Honestly, not scared of most of those lineups, period. Right now, at least, White Sox is hit and miss, but it's cooled down a lot. What I want to ask you, though, so he came back, worked out of the pen early on. Last two outings, he's allowed 7 runs over 11 innings, and it's only 4 combined strikeouts over those two starts. So there's one start against the Angels with no walks and 7 Ks doing the heavy lifting on these stats, Ryan. What are your thoughts on Christian Javier?
And that's what I worry. And that can be the trouble, right? That can be the issue. And sometimes why I hesitate looking at like last 3 weeks, last 30 days of stat, you could have just one awesome or one terrible outing that can kind of skew this stuff. And yeah, in Christian Javier's case, like, just had a great night against the Angels. A lot of guys have a great night against the Angels. 7 Ks, no walks, 3 hits over 5 scoreless for Christian Javier. But then, yeah, like what you just said, 4 combined strikeouts over his last 2 starts. Yeah, like he's not really walking anybody, but I don't know. I'm very, very lukewarm on Christian Javier. Would I start him against Seattle in 15 teamers? Probably. Would I start him at home against the A's? Probably. Would I start him in Yankee Stadium? Probably not. So it's tough. I don't know. I don't know what you think about Javier, but obviously I'm very tepid when so much of your stats are one great game against a bad lineup.
Yeah, if you're going to roster Javier, you're going to start him for the next two that you mentioned, Seattle and Sacramento, both in Houston. If he throws well, then you're starting him against the Yankees because their really offense isn't that good. So you can calm down there. It's still Yankees in Yankee Stadium, but is what it is. He's primarily a 15-team play. For a 12, if you're going to be volatile, like I think Christian Javier is going to be, you at least need to strike guys out. That's why I liked Kumar Rocker. At least if he gets hit around, he's going to get you a K per inning or more. Like that's what, so at least he's not completely ruining your stat line for the night. At least right. Like Gabriel Hughes on Monday night, he gets shelled, but he still gets you strikeouts and gets through 5. Like he's not completely leaving you. He hurt you. Don't get me wrong, but he didn't like crush your entire
destroy you. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like there's like even though start before for you, struck out 7 while giving up like 4 runs. Like at least give me something if you're going to mess with my ratios. And I don't know if Javier is a given for that. And the next couple guys are questionable for that as well. And that's what kind of keeps me off that profile, I guess. If it comes down to picking between guys, at least give me the strikeout upside, which I don't think Javier has consistently enough.
Yep. Yeah, that's fair.
And Keiter Montero fits that mix. And I would love to talk to the 42% of people starting Keiter Montero this week. I know it's the Cleveland Guardians. Fine. Actually healthier and improved lineup. We'll go there. But it's still the Guardians. 17% K to walk for Montero, 13% swinging strike, 34% ball rate. But again, this is kind of like the Javier thing. It's been 9 earned runs in 2 out of his last 3. But more importantly, at 5 Ks, but then 3 Ks combined for 2 starts. Very up and down profile from Keiter Montero, where he had a good stretch, a really good stretch. The last since he rejoined the rotation, it is hot or cold right now.
Yeah, very much hot or cold. I remember that first start back in the rotation for Montero at Chicago, 8 Ks, no walks, and that started like a fab mini bonanza. Since then, 6 walks, 8 strikeouts, and 3 starts, which not great, not missing many bats. I don't know. Who do you like more the rest of the season, Keiter Montero or not even rest of the season? Because I know that's your favorite question. Over these next 4 matchups,
well, at least it almost Javier or
Keiter Montero,
huh? It almost counts now, at least because we're actually close.
We're talking half of season at this point.
Javier or Montero?
Given the matchup, because the matchups are not great for Kader Montero. Like, so Cleveland this week at Pittsburgh. At Pittsburgh crushes righties. The Rays are good against righties, and then the Dodgers are, you know, that's the last matchup for Montero. I'd probably go Javier.
I'd go Javier too. But to be totally honest, I'd go the next guy over both of them.
If Prelip? We want
to get real. Yeah. Okay. Connor Prelip is interesting because this the whole spiel I just gave about Javier and strikeouts, Prelip's at least given us those. And that, along with some good starts. So first off, 15% started in 12s for Prelip, 16% K to walk, 14% swinging strike over the last 30 days. But we look at Connor Prelip's profile, it's 3 in runs or less since June 19th. That's like 6 starts, and then 7 out of 8. So he's been on a really good run of late. And then it's been 5 or more Ks and 4 straight starts. He had one start where he walked 4. Otherwise, it's 2 or less. So it's that volatility I can live with because he's giving me strikeouts. And honestly, the whip isn't great, but the ERA isn't crushing you either. So there's actually, you're getting stuff out of Connor Prelip. And you look at his matchups, there's no two steps. All the guys before this have at least a two step. But it's Philadelphia who is struggling. At Sacramento's a little sketch, I get it, but then Detroit as well. I don't mind Connor Prelip if you need to stream a guy for at least 2 out of these 3 starts.
Yeah, I guess I'm not as high on Prelip. I just worry about, like, he's so far into uncharted waters with the workload. That's like fair. Just so many injuries, and yeah, I mean, even Prelip himself this season has been hurt. But I mean, yeah, since returning from the IL, to your point, he's been slightly better. The schedule is favorable. I'd probably lean Prelip over Javier Montero as well, but certainly below the other guys we've talked about so far.
Yep, these are just streaming options. And this next guy epitomizes skills not matching results consistently enough. Matthew Liberatore, it's every Fab article I think I write about the guy because he's less than 60% in OCs. Because either he's pitching really well or has a great matchup. One of the two, if not both. Almost every week right now. Liberatore is 11% started in 12s. 18.2% K to walk, which, you know, not elite, but good. 12% swinging strike, 34% ball rate. You can talk about the matchups in a second, but I just want to reiterate why the sketchiness here. 5 earned runs, no earned runs. 3 earned runs, 5 earned runs, 0-3. That's his last 6 starts. But it's 5 or more Ks in 4 out of 6 and 2 or fewer walks in each one. So he has the ability to be awesome. He has the ability to rock your world at the same time and not in a good way, folks. So what's your thoughts on Liberatore here? Because he also has, out of this Bloom board alone, he has the 3rd worst opponent's WRC+.
Yeah, rocking your world could be a good thing. But in Liberatore, he's like a mini Lizardo. Just all or nothing.
Yeah, in the past, this year it's all pretty much for Lizardo. But yes, you're not wrong. You're not wrong with that at all. Liberatore has a lot of Mackenzie Gore in him.
Okay, I'll go with that comp. I don't know. I'm scared as hell. I don't know. Like the swing strike's not great for Liberatore, so not missing many bats, and then the schedule. At Cubs is tough. Yeah, you check Wrigley wins, see what's going on there. But at LA, in 4 starts from now, in between, it's a little better at Cincinnati versus Baltimore. But I don't know. You're maybe using Liberatore twice in the next 3 weeks, maybe probably once. You probably find some better options.
Yep, that's why it's just frustrating because the skill set is really good.
I know.
The results have not fall, and the matchups are dang tricky. Let's talk Jared Jones, because my goodness. It looked like he was back after like 4 just outstanding, efficient starts. Then it's been rough, and the last one was really rough for Jared Jones. But over the last 30 days, 17.2% K to walk, 12.4% swinging strike, which actually surprises me it's that low, and a 35% ball percentage. And he's got a little bit above league average opponents. You got Boston, who's red hot, at Dodgers, at San Diego. And the Giants are actually sneakier than people think when it comes to WRC+, because they're kind of pesky. What's your thoughts on this for Jared Jones? Because we've already talked in the past, Ryan. If he's not efficient, he's not going 5, but he's already hurting you in that regard.
I know. And I did bench Jared Jones. Yep. I think I've got him in too many leagues, but I benched him in at least one of our, either the Vegas Listener League or the Beat the Bloom OC. One of those two. I remember benching Jared Jones this week against Boston, just because the last start was so bad. You just wonder. Let's see how he looks against Boston. If he doesn't look good against Boston, there's no way I'm throwing him at LA. So it's tough. This is one you have to hold just because the ceiling for Jared Jones is so good. But yeah, man, I spent a lot of money on Mr. Jared Jones. We've got an ERA now north of 5 after the last blow up. And K to walk over the last month, still really good, 17%. You like that. But just the way he's looked lately, plus the next couple of matchups, I'm nervous. I think the 52% start percentage is probably fair. It's probably accurate.
I benched him everywhere I could until Eovaldi went on the IL. So if I had Eovaldi, was like my best option. He got put back in. But so it's probably like 50-50 because I have him in too many leagues as well, just like you. But I just want to bring this question, I guess, for people to consider with maybe other players as well. I'm not going to be dropping Jared Jones, but let's say you see a player you're rostering and you see for the next 4 starts, you're not even going to start this player. Why are we holding this player is my question, since we only have 6 weeks to go. So I'm not saying like you're not dropping Jones either, but I'm throwing that into the ether for people when you're looking for ad drops for the week. When you see some of these people posting their fab, acquisitions every Sunday night, it's like, how did you make 6 moves? This is how they realize the time of the year we're at. They realize what are we using, not using, so on and so forth. And this is a scenario like you mentioned earlier with Devin Williams. If you have 3 closers, maybe you don't need Devin Williams. You just drop him anyways. Like Jared Jones, in reality, if we're worried about him even qualifying for wins and you're not using him, honestly, if he gets shelled against Boston, he might get cut this weekend in my leagues just because, like,
sure,
at least in 12s. Like, so I just want to bring that to the forefront as well.
Yep. Yeah. If you remove the name value from it, if it's someone you're not using for half the season, I get it.
So just something for people to consider as well. All right. A few more here. Kate Cavalli has been really good since getting banged up with some injuries and whatnot and getting ejected and all that fun stuff. But 20% K to walk over the last 30 days, a little less than 12% swinging strike, 35.4% ball, 75% started with that Cubs matchup, which I'll give him credit there. Then at Texas, Colorado, Miami, that's the road Rockies to top that off. So this is honestly, I know it's a WRC plus round 101, but really good set of matchups here for Cavalli.
I agree. I think so too. Skills have been awesome for Cavalli. I would even venture auto start at this point, especially given over the next 3 weeks at least.
Yeah, I mentioned that someone was asking, I think, in the Discord over the weekend or something. I'm like, if you have 7 other options that are better than Kate Cavalli every week, congratulations on your win. But you should be starting Kate Cavalli right now. He's throwing 6 innings in like 6 straight. It's like he's doing everything you want from a starting pitcher. That's all you can ask for. If he doesn't get wins, that's not all his fault.
Yeah, if you're debating sitting Cavalli, you are doing better than me in your leagues. We'll just say that.
Let's say, would you start Kate Cavalli or Walbert Arena, who started in 71% of 12-team leagues, 12.2% K to walk, which is bad, fully admit, near 14% swinging strike, 34% ball rate. And as a league average matchups, Texas, Houston, Cleveland, Philly, and Urania had his worst start since June 26th. But prior to that, absolutely filthy. So I guess I'll give you the floor since you're the number one fan, since you just recently had him join one of your teams.
Why would you give me the floor for this guy? You know I'm coming in hot tonight. Yep. Don't want to go too hard here. But yeah, I picked up this wonderful player last week in my 10-team head-to-head home league. Has his worst start of the freaking year when I needed him. I'm trying to stream extra pitchers, and Urania gets me negative 11 points in ESPN leagues. So I don't know. I cannot stand the guy. I don't even – you can talk about him. Screw him.
No, it's one of those where I'm going to keep rolling with it, but, like, it's kind of part of the joke.
Look at this red, dude. Like, no, what the hell?
That's where I'm going. That's where I'm going. I'm actually going to give you props on this if you just let me have this one. The reason why Ryan has disdain for Walbert, besides the fact he's made him look wrong the entire season, is Ryan looks at his metrics and he's not wrong. Like, it's been bad. And the next guy we're going to talk about has very similar metrics. And I'm going to poo-poo all over him. And if you just took the names away, I should poo-poo on both of them is what we're going through here. So I'm giving you your props in that regard. Walbert has outpitched his expectation to that extent. I'm going to keep rolling with him until he could does not fit his expectations.
The thing I will say about Walbert is luckiest pitcher on earth for his first, whatever, 2-3 months of the season. Like, unbelievably ran pure. Has velocities up over, like, the last, like, he's actually...
He's improving.
Lately, it's been better. He's missing bats. And the big thing, too, is the ground ball rate, right? You called him, like, Jorge Soriano Jr. or whatever. Yep. Like, it's a ton of ground balls. I don't necessarily buy the, like, yes, there hasn't been a lot of hard contact on against Walbert Urania this season. That is a true fact. I don't know. I know that's not very sticky going forward. So is that something that's going to hold or not? I think not. I think that has a lot of noise in it for pitchers and how much hard contact they give up year over year. But I will give Urania credit. Velocity's up lately. He's missing more bats lately. Ton of ground balls. I like all that. But man, there will be books written about how lucky this guy has been. I know, I'm bitter. I know. And I am wrong. This guy has proven me wrong many times. But that's just where we're at in this relationship.
Let me throw this one at you. Would you rather, we're talking about overachieving pitchers, would you rather start Walbert Urania or Javier Fassad?
Jesus Christ. I mean, Urania.
Yeah, that's why I had to hear you say that real quick before we move on.
Well, I mean, why would you even ask me that?
Because those are like your two most hated pitchers, because each of them, the skills just looks, yeah. The facade skills look.
The thing with facade, people agree with me on facade. Urania, I'm on a complete island. Every time this dude pitches well, I just get nuked from all angles and well-deserved. Whatever, I can take it.
There you go. Okay, a couple more. Your boy Emerson Hancock, 56% started in 12s. 13.3% K to walk, slightly better than Walbert. 12.2% swinging strike, 32% ball rate. So he's finding the zone, which is what we like about him. But as the season has gone along, the results have begun to dwindle, Ryan. And we thought he'd be out of this rotation by now. He is not. So read on Emerson Hancock. He gets at Houston, Cubbies, Philadelphia, and at Boston.
Surprised he's still a Mariner. Just has it looked very good at the beginning of the season and just been kind of blah lately for me. Emerson Hancock schedule's just okay, so I don't know. Like I'd roll with them over if we're comparing Hancock to the last couple of starters we've talked about. I'd roll with them over. I'd probably do Urania over Hancock. I'd do Cavalli over Hancock. Jared Jones Hancock's about a push for me, and I would do Hancock over Liberatore.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I guess I'm just out on Hancock, but I'm not going to disagree with some of
those. That's fine. I get it.
I'm not going to disagree, though, at the same time. They're pretty similar, and his matchups are at least better. So yeah. If you're playing that game, you got a shot up by just none of them. Like I said, the top, like, six guys, I'm all aboard those trains. As we go down this list, it's getting shakier to get into it. Anthony Kay is another guy that was very popular in recent weeks, and it's been it's been good. Don't get me wrong. Three earned runs or less in every start since June 22nd. That's good. But the strikeouts have been kind of inconsistent. That is represented by a 12.9% K to walk with a 13.5% swinging strike rate and a near 36% ball rate, which is not what we want to see. And some very tricky matchups coming up for Anthony Kay, Ryan.
Yeah. So not really interested in Anthony Kay. Not pitching well of late, and tough matchups. Like, the Cubs destroy lefties. It's at Detroit. It's at the Cubs. It's versus Texas, who's been very good against lefties this season. So probably out of everyone we've talked about, this is probably the guy I'm on least.
This next guy is the first guy in a while I'm actually intrigued by on this list. And I mentioned on the last Fab show that I'm like, okay, maybe they changed something. He went to the minors, Andrew Painter, that is. Once a highly touted prospect, obviously did not go well the first time through. Comes back up. He's made three starts since coming from AAA. 15 and a third innings, 5 earned runs, 16 Ks, 7 walks over the last 30 days. That should equate to a whopping about 15%. Sorry, I skipped a guy. 15% K to walk, 13.4% swinging strike. The 38% ball rate is what terrifies me. But then I look at the matchups. Twins actually are the best matchup here, probably, like, to not face. But the Cardinals, Angels, D-backs. Painter's got a nice schedule coming up, Ryan. And I think this is a guy you could potentially bench stream going forward.
Yeah, I struggle with this one. I hear you. The matchups are awesome, but he can't throw strikes. And you mentioned that. So, like, if he can't throw strikes, does it really matter who you face? I don't know. That's the thing where I'm just like, the control has been so bad with Andrew Painter. I mean, even since he's come back in those three starts, right? Two of those three starts has been three walks.
It's a 0.98 whip, though, which is entertaining.
Well, yeah, that's called running pure. That's called the Urania effect.
Giddy up.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone loves a giddy up, except for me. So I don't know. I need to see more from Andrew Painter. I know, and the matchups are awesome on paper. So I totally understand if you want to bench stream this guy. But until he can throw more strikes, it just feels very risky.
All right, I accidentally skipped Jack Perkins, but I honestly don't think it was an accident. He's just been so bad, and I want nothing to do with him. So I realized that after the fact. But yeah, we're out on that one. I'll bring up Patrick Sandoval, who tonight allowed two earned runs over six innings, three walks, four Ks. So that was kind of a bummer, but still not a horrible start. And I've been kind of pumping the excitement level on this. It's still a 12% K to walk. It's a 13.5% swinging strike, but the matchups are great. At Pittsburgh, they don't hit lefties well. That's just a given. They hit righties very well. They do not hit lefties well. Giants at the Yankees, Seattle. So at least two starts are really good. I'm not opposed to the others if you have to, but I think Sandoval, 15s is a yes, 12s kind of still up in the air. But what are your thoughts on Mr. Patrick Sandoval?
Yeah, no, full agree. You and Ben covered Sandoval quite well the back half of Monday's show, where you guys go through and kind of look at the best matchups only for the next 3 weeks. So, matchups are awesome for Sandoval. Eating crow a little bit here, because I kind of tried to crap on you and Sandoval when he was first brought up. Of course, that backfired, as usual, in our year 2026. But no, awesome matchups for Sandoval. Pitching well enough to make it worth it. So I like it.
All right, last one on the list here. This is one where it's like, I wish I had 4 months more to go so I could watch this a little longer, but you almost have to jump on or jump off, and that is Grayson Rodriguez. It's a 12.3% K to walk, 13% swinging strike, 36% ball. Matchups are about average. Royals are actually swinging it better than usual. Houston, Cleveland, Yankees. But the thing that entices me, and it goes back to like the Kumar Rockers of the world. Last three starts for Grayson Rodriguez, it's been 16 innings pitched. It's been 8 earned runs. It was 4 earned runs in this last start. He had 4 walks. They had 8 Ks. Prior to that was 3 walks and 12 Ks over 2 starts. Point being, strikeouts are there. It's going to be volatile. Skills are starting to show up, but it's tough.
Yeah, a nice uptick in whiffs as well. So you do have a 30% swing strike for Grayson to kind of back that recent uptick in Ks. I don't know, man. I feel like I gotta take a step back here, and this is Grayson Rodriguez, man. Like,
I get it.
I mean, he's been awful for a long time and injured for a long time. So, yeah. Yes, a nice uptick. But that's the tricky part, is you get someone who is consistently pretty mediocre. You have a 3-start sample where he's been okay. You got to jump on it and at least just see, or else you're too late. Right. Yep. So anyone who kind of reaps the rewards has already done it. And that's the tricky part with that. That's the part I struggle with, honestly.
And that's why I said, I wish we had like 4 months so I could watch a little more, but it's like, you got to go now or you got nothing. And like after that Yankee start on the list, it's a 2-step that week, Yankees and at Pittsburgh. That's kind of scary. So it's tough. Like the skills I'm intrigued by, especially that strikeout upside. So again, as you watch your teams, if you're not worried about your ratios and you want strikeouts because you can move up a couple points, Grayson might not be a bad pick. Just throwing that into the ether for you. But sure, be prepared for your ratios to get lit up. But if you don't care, so be it. We had a question in the chat here from Bad at Mathrock. Where would you slot Tidwell in this group? Looked pretty good. He doesn't meet the criteria here, but he has looked really good, and I've been pro Tidwell since before he was called up. So, yes.
Yeah, if we're watching here, I'd probably put Tidwell, just based on this like sliding scale of skills. I don't have his matchups in front of me, but I'd probably put him like above, probably around like Leahy.
Yep, I was gonna say between Leahy and like Rocker. That's where I had him. Yeah.
So top third of this group, Blade Tidwell.
Yeah, he's a bench streamer. I want to call
him Blake, but
I know. Yes. I always try to call him Blake, but it's Blade. Yes, it's cooler than that, actually, is what's cool. So, yeah, and Paul makes a point that I saw today. The Angels actually fired Mike Maddox and the other pitching staff. It was really weird. They've done such good things with that rotation this year. And in typical Angels fashion, peace. Any other thoughts on this board before we get to listener questions? It's a very intriguing board. Schedules are clutch, and I hope like some of the take-homes were strategy-wise, it's not just the pitchers at the same time.
Yeah, I think, right. So, I mean, we hit on just a bunch of specific players. But, yeah, if you want to take an overall takeaway of strategies, it's kind of, yeah, look at these last 3 weeks, last 30 days of pitching skills, see who's kind of bubbling up. And then just as important this time of season, these matchups over the not only the week ahead, but the next 3 weeks. And that's what we have in the starting pitcher planner for the Patreon folks. Every day it's updated with the next 3 weeks of matchups, just so you can kind of look ahead and see what's going on there. And it's just, yeah, it's interesting that the next 3 weeks is half the season. That's we are there, man. We are there.
Yep. It's getting real. It's pretty soon. I got my RotoWire grid up all the time for starting pitchers, and you can do the 28 days and pretty soon.
Oh no, it's going to run out.
That's pretty soon. It's not going to matter. And
that's depressing.
Because I always have that up to help me look ahead for stuff, and that's going to get real sad pretty quickly. Yep. All right, let's talk about some listener questions from the old Discord per usual here. We got a couple. Dustin Anderson says, surprise, Ryan didn't make it 70%, so Urania wouldn't make the list. That's fair.
I include all. I do not manipulate these boards. Accuracy and for the people.
Lang's got a great comp here. Is Jack Perkins the new Zebby? The skills look like he ought to be good.
Yeah.
The results say he isn't. That's true. Jack Perkins looks like he should be really good, but he's not.
That's actually real strong. Would it surprise you, Lang, that I have teams with both Zebby and fucking Jack Perkins on it? I hate myself, man.
I'm not saying anything. I'm leaving this one alone.
It's like, no, but it's a great comp. It is.
And you were a guy that looks at like skills numbers more than the reaction. I'm not knocking you, but I got you. So that's why you would have both of them on your team. It makes sense. That's all I'm saying. It makes sense. So,
yeah, it
does. Yeah. Our buddy Dustin McComas, when do you begin more heavily weighing upcoming schedules compared to skills, and how does that impact adds and drops this time of the year?
Yeah, I'm interested actually more in your thoughts on this than mine. I mean, I always keep it high of mind throughout the season. It's just even more of an emphasis starting about now. And it's, I typically look at 3 week horizons, and when 3 weeks is half the season, that's when you really like it, to what we were saying earlier. If you don't think someone is usable for the next 3 weeks based on matchups, that's half the year. What are you doing with the guy? So in terms of like add drops, I'm more aggressive. I start to get more aggressive now. I'm not as aggressive earlier in the season. I'm obviously aggressive with the start sits, but once we get to this time of year, if someone's not usable for 2-3 weeks, I think you probably have to go.
Yeah. And that goes for hitters too, folks, not just the pitchers.
Sure.
So keep that in mind. Like we talked about Jeff McNeil, I'm not trying to promote him, but we talked about their upcoming schedule, ton of righties. That means if you have like Tommy Tinkles, probably not using him anytime soon. And why would you have him on your roster? Like when you could have someone else you can stream for a bi-weekly, you know, start sit, stuff like that. It works. It works for hitters too. And also like if you want to maximize at bats and say you have a bunch of pitchers on your roster and you start realizing you can drop pitchers for hitters to maximize your bi-weekly hits as well. So you got to start thinking along those lines. It's not just pitcher for pitcher, hitter for hitter. Not everybody does that. I know a lot of people do. So you got to keep that on your radar as well, because pretty soon, you know, a lot of people will talk about it. The last Fab show is make sure you only have 9 pitchers, because why would you have a bench pitcher when you could have a bench bat? You can start slowly graduating to that as you're working through this, and makes it a lot easier come that final Fab Sunday to make sure you're not holding the bag on extra pitchers. So I wanted to bring that up as well. But I always look at like recent skills regardless, but schedule, I'm churning a lot more than I used to. So I'm paying attention to upcoming schedules quite a bit, but it's very important now to your guys' point.
Yep.
Chasco says, when evaluating players affected by the trade deadline, How much of a sample size do you need before drawing conclusions? Like bad, Ramos, Elliot Ramos, I'm guessing. Yeah. Has been reincarnated in New York.
Incarcerated in New York.
Well, he might as well be. He's 2 for 21 since the trade. When he's at his worst, he chases a ton and pounds the ball to the ground. The only silver lining, the Yankees have yet to play a road game since the deadline. So how do you evaluate? Slumps happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and there's probably some narrative to write, especially in like Ramos's case, going from San Francisco now to New York, and you're thrust into a high pressure environment, playoff race, all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. For me, it's probably just small sample. If the playing time is still there, if the playing time looks safe, especially for hitters, you gotta ride it out. If the playing time's at risk, sure, like you can be more aggressive with some moves. But if the playing time's there, I kind of agree. I think if it's a 3-week slump, it's a 3-week slump. But you kind of keep rolling with these guys if you believe in them.
And what I could also say with that is have an option to bench him. Like Esmerlin Valdez has been atrocious for 3 weeks.
Yeah,
bench him. I'm not cutting Esmerlin Valdez. I'm not cutting Elliot Ramos, but I'm also benching Valdez where I can and putting in, like, even PD Halpin was an option for me this week. Like, there's guys you can stream based on schedules and see where things go. And you don't have to start these guys at all times. So that's another option besides just cutting a player. You can bench him for a week. And if they really start to look horrible, yeah, then you can start talking about a potential drop and see where it goes. So yep. There's options besides the extreme. And that's Captain Cuts telling you that one. All right, Ryan, we'll wrap it up there. Final thoughts. We got our week 22 fab coming up Thursday night as we round this thing down the home stretch. Is it the quarter pole now? Is that where we're at? Are we finally there? Did I get it right?
I don't know. Man. Too late in the damn day.
I'll contact the good Lord. I'll talk to the good Lord on that one.
Hit him up when he rolls up to first pitch. You can go greet him.
Oh, man, but any final thoughts as we wrap it up? This ride is out of steam, folks. He is bourboned out. Yeah. He is golfed out. He's out. Yeah. I got him with Grayson Rodriguez. He's done.
Yeah, once you hit me with Grayson, just ended it. No, I'm good. This was I did enjoy this show. I think actually the kind of the sample of pitchers that we talked about is pretty firmly in that start, sit, what do I do type of deal, given the skills and matchup. So hopefully it was helpful from a player-by-player standpoint, but also if you can kind of take away maybe our thought processes as we're going through these guys, that can help with your own decisions.
Yep, most definitely. So make sure you guys support the show if you can. You know, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. If you want to join the Patreon, knock yourself out. Bubba and Bloom Patreon is a place to be as well. But, we'll be back with you guys Thursday night, previewing week 22 fab next Tuesday. Should be around the same time. Might be a little later, but we will have you Tuesday night. Recapping the first 15 rounds of our meatball draft for 2027. Yes, said that correctly. So a lot going on. We don't slow down around here, as you all know. But until then, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. This was Bubba and the Bloom episode 372. Catch you all next time.